The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Hi, everybody, and welcome back. My name is Mary Larson.
Mavin, you jumped the gun there a little bit.
Okay.
Little too, you didn't let the go through.
Sorry, come on, I was now. Just so excited.
You don't step on John Williams like that.
I know.
What are we doing?
Very true.
Mavin, come
Hi,
on.
Hi, I'm Mary.
My name is Blake. How is everything going today? And I'm ready. I'm ready for the extendable is.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
I'm ready for what I've learned has been referred to as Caps Lock Harry.
Yes. Oh, yes. Those of you who are audiobook only, you are missing out on the visual aspects of this chapter. You may just have to whip yours off your little bookshelf there and check it out, because Harry yells louder than Sirius's mom.
Oh, man. And
that's saying something. No joke either, that is saying something. Well, of course, we are here in chapter 4, number 12, Grimwald Place. And I wanted to read the first bit of this caps lock for you. So you haven't been in the meetings? Big deal. You've still been here, haven't you? You've still been together. Me? I've been stuck at the Dursleys for a month, and I've handled more than you two have ever managed. And Dumbledore knows it. Who saved the Sorcerer's Stone? Who got rid of Riddle? Who saved both your skins from the Dementors? And who had to get past dragons and sphinxes and every other foul thing last year? Who saw him come back? Who had to escape from him? Me. But why should I know what's going on? Why should anyone bother to tell me what's been happening? Can't have wanted to tell me that much, can you? Or you'd have sent me an owl. But Dumbledore made you swear. 4 weeks I've been stuck on Privet Drive, nicking papers out of bins and trying to find out what's been going on. I suppose you've been having a real laugh, haven't you? All holed up here together. I skipped all of the narrated parts and Hermione trying to calm him down. I just read straight Harry Potter, Gryffindor rage.
Oh, man, Mavin.
He let it all out.
As soon as I heard that, there was just one person on my planet that I was thinking of.
Really?
It was absolutely you.
Oops.
That was,
ain't no fire like a Gryffindor fire.
I'll tell you what, you were reading that so well that it was clipping on our...
Oh, it felt the caps lock.
Oh, the soundboard, the mixing board absolutely felt the caps lock.
You are welcome, my friends.
So if you heard some cracking, ladies and gents, it's because of the Gryffindor rage.
And when I wanted to read it all without the narration or without Hermione interjecting, because that was Harry's train of thought.
Oh, sure.
He wasn't even stopping. It was still like full steam ahead. I need to get this all off my plate. I need to finally unload. I finally get to have some kind of release. And I think that's what it was for Harry. And I love it because as we go on this chapter, other people comment upon Harry's yelling and him... You know, causing quite a stir, because he is not quiet. He is not quiet at all.
But no, not at all.
Our friends, we do want to take just a brief little reminder to thank those of you who are members at jointhenerdclan.com. You make this and all of our other podcasts possible. Truly, we are a mom and pop supported podcast. And if we bring Lumos to any times of Knox, we would really appreciate your support. You can join for as little as $2 a month. That is less than a cup of coffee. I mean, heck, that's how much a bottle of water costs. If you're lucky. It hits water.
Oh, thanks to inflation.
Well, and anyway, I have an issue with bottles of water anyway.
It's the BPAs that do you in. That's the problem.
No, it's just like, why are we doing this? Why are we causing all of this mess in the oceans? Anyway, so thank you. Thank you for those of you who are members, those of you who are going to join. It really means a lot to us. And on that note, let's get into the show.
Let's do it.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
So our mini plot recap, for those of you who have blasted through this chapter a while ago and may forget, this is the chapter where Harry is reunited with Ron and Hermione. He is at the meeting place of the Order of the Phoenix, 12 Grimmauld Place, and he also gets to meet back up with the loud and yammering Sirius Black, telling his mother's portrait to be quiet. We're in this like dark and grimy, gross place, and Harry lets it all out.
He does. He's not afraid to crack some eggs here.
Yeah,
he wants to crack some eggs.
He has a lot of big feelings.
Can't make an omelet without cracking eggs. That's the thing. That's what I learned.
Oh,
you know, Harry's got to make an omelet.
Okay,
he's got an omelet of feelings. Maybe some cilantro in there. Maybe some ham.
Yeah,
you know.
Okay. Don't know where you're going with this, but sure.
He's just got an omelet of feelings. He's got a plethora, a cornucopia, if you will, of feelings.
And most of that feeling right now is anger.
Yes,
and that's okay.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
If those of you who've watched the movie Inside Out, all I could picture was the anger emotion with
just
his head
Lewis
on fire.
Black on
but,
fire.
But little Harry Potter version of it. You know, like sadness Harry Potter, like sitting in the corner
with the glasses.
Nobody decided to write me a letter. And anger's just there, full control board. Let me do this. I've been waiting for this all summer.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you have done this, Mary? Would you have flipped out on everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
So here's the thing. We're going to give Potter some grace. All book long. All book long.
Well, yeah.
Okay, a month ago. No, 2 months ago.
Another kid died.
Yes, by the person who murdered his parents.
Yes.
And people don't even believe him. And now he's been shut out. You know, he didn't get any birthday celebrations, which his birthday was 7 days ago.
Yeah, nobody cares about his birthday.
Nobody cares about his birthday. No one cares about his birthday week.
No,
okay?
He's not getting a birthday princess week.
I mean.
That's the problem.
Yeah, yeah, let's be real.
And everyone deserves a birthday
Hagrid
princess
did
week.
Not show up with that pink cake on the 31st. But yeah, he's gone through all of this. So he obviously has trauma. He has a lot of things that he needs to work through. Now he's finding out that people have been keeping secrets from him that, you know, for one reason or another, which isn't explained well enough to him. Mm-hmm. These are the people he feels the safest with. And frequently the people who you love and you feel the safest with are the people who you're allowed to share your truest and rawest emotions with. So just like you can fight and yell and be upset with your partner, your parents, your kids, whomever. I mean, you shouldn't be yelling at your kids, but people do.
It happens.
But you feel big is what I'm trying to say with the people who you feel big about in the other way. It's like you can't like the bell curve. You know what I mean? It's like you can't have the... You can't have the dark without the light.
Yes, that's true.
You know?
You know, I think you took Star Wars The Last Jedi just a little too seriously there, Mom. Okay.
But that's what I'm trying to say is that, you know, people who you feel meh about, that don't really thrill you, don't excite you, that you don't love, you don't care. You can just lie to them. Yeah, sure, I'm fine. Whatever. Yeah, like, I don't know you. I don't know you, Tonks. So I'm just going to be nice to you.
Right.
And you make a little joke about my scar and I say, whatever.
Well, yeah, because the bigger the close, I know you were just alluding to this, but the bigger the closeness, the bigger the feelings.
Yes.
So, yes.
And this is where he can be safe. And he is the most disappointed in these friends.
Does Harry have a right to be disappointed?
100%.
Even after
100%.
Even after the explanation that they give.
Yes.
Why do you think he has the right, the 100% right to be that explosive?
Because when have these three Gryffindors ever listened to an adult?
Fair.
You're welcome.
But if it was in Harry's best interest,
if I was part of the trio, or if I was like the hangout kind of like quad person, if it was like Harry, Ron, Hermione, and Mary, because once again, we have no idea who is another girl essentially inside their year. We don't know who all of Hermione's roommates are.
Good point. Yep.
I'm just pretending I'm there. I would have told him some stuff. I would have.
Yep.
Snape now gets to know more than Harry Potter.
Yeah, he's a professor. He's an
when
adult.
When has that ever stopped these kids?
Snape's always known more than Harry the entire time.
I know, but when has it ever stopped them from not paying attention? Okay, what are you going to do, Dumbledore? Put me in detention if I tell Potter a little something? Now, for the fear of like, oh, an owl could get intercepted.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, is it for Harry's best interests? And do they understand that it's in Harry's best interests?
Just still be vague. Still be vague.
Well, that's what they did. They were vague.
They weren't.
They were nothing. Hermione even said it. These were nothing letters. And they had to be.
I would have given more insight.
I
would have given it in like code language. Okay.
And I'm sure that
I would have been like, hey, do you remember how there was like a club with like a werewolf and a dog and a stag, and they had to, you know, keep it on the down low? You know, it's something like that is happening. So it's on the down low. But don't worry. Okay.
And you let's get you on the opposite side of that. Are you telling me that you're Harry Potter, you're Caps Lock Harry,
yeah,
and you're going to...
I would do more.
And you're going to accept that answer from Hermione?
I would do more.
What do you mean you would do more?
You put me on the spot to write an encoded letter to Harry freaking Potter right now.
Well, that's what you get. You get Harry...
I'm Harry freaking Potter.
That's what you get. That's what Hermione's got. She's got Hedwig there. She's got Hedwig there pecking at her hands.
Yes.
She's bleeding.
Yes.
He's lucky that he gets anything.
Yeah. No, I would have told him more.
What you got? Hedwig pecking at you.
Yes.
And you got Dumbledore in your other ear, yeah, being like, "Don't say nothing. You can't say anything, because if you do, it's gonna put Harry freaking Potter.
I'm Harry freaking Potter.
Your best friend in danger. What are you gonna do?
Write an invisible ink. Do something.
No, see, that's not an acceptable.
I'm not gonna
answer.
Tell him every. Okay, well, once again, you put me on the spot.
Well,
okay?
Hermione's on the spot.
Hermione could have written letters before Hedwig bit her, and she could have thought them out. I'm just saying. I'm not saying the kids are at fault. I think this is all Dumbledore's fault.
You know what, Mary?
You're basic.
You're basic. And it's okay.
I think it's Dumbledore's fault.
It absolutely is Dumbledore's fault.
I would have written in my letter, Dumbledore's telling me I can't write anything. I'm mad at him. Are you mad at him too? And then they could bond over their anger.
Ah, now you see, that is... a good answer. Yeah. I'll give you that.
There you go. See, that's what I do.
Listen, Dumbledore's telling me to shut up. I got to do it. I'm pissed.
He's looking at my letters.
Yeah.
I love you.
Trust me, there's a reason.
Let's be angry together.
Yeah.
I'll see you soon.
Let's be angry together.
Here's some more chocolate.
It'll make you feel better.
Since you had Dementors. Like, send him chocolate.
Give me a chocolate frog or something.
Oh, my God.
Right?
Who are these jabronis?
It's the cards that you want. You're welcome, world.
But yes, I think that I would have reacted the same way. I think when you're around people who you're close to, I think if Dumbledore was there, that's who should have gotten the brunt.
Well, here's the thing. Dumbledore, and we all know this, I think. Mm-hmm. Dumbledore at this time... of the series, I think he's letting Harry down on multiple levels.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, I still believe that he thinks he's doing what's best for Harry.
Well, part of me wonders, is some of Harry's anger the little Horcrux in him?
Well, yeah, I've thought about that too, right? And I kind of agree with that.
Like, did it take the emotion of anger and give it a little more oomph?
Sure, because it also makes you wonder if the author already knows that the Horcrux is in Harry.
Yes.
Right? Because if she does, then yes, I'm buying in.
Yes.
Right? If she doesn't, then this is all kind of narrativium, right? Like, you know.
I think by this point, yes.
What is the evidence that would suggest that the author knows? Just
I've got
have
great
faith.
Intuition. Baby.
We call that the wham effect. Just got to have faith. That's a joke for you olds out there.
Okay.
Hey, for you youngins, go ask your parents about wham.
What was discouraging too for Harry is he tries to ask these questions while he's being brought over with the advance guard, and Mad-Eye Moody's like, stop asking, quiet, don't say anything, yeah. Stop it. You know, because Lord knows who could be listening in and everything. Yeah. So I appreciate that they're taking things seriously.
Oh, definitely not Snapely.
No. And then, of course, when they get into Grimmauld Place, it is a hot mess express.
Yeah, the whole thing's a dirty, dingy mess. Like, I love the description of when she said, the author said it smelled like mold or, like, I can't remember off the top of my head, but as soon as the author wrote it.
He could smell damp dust and a Swedish rotting smell. The place had the feeling of a derelict building.
Yeah, I love that description because instantly, mm-hmm, we all know what that smells like.
Interestingly enough, there was an old umbrella stand that looked as though it had been made from a troll's leg. And this could, you know how Mrs. Fig was making jokes like, the Pixies out of the bag and things like that, that were kind of like muggle related jokes or sayings or activities that have been wizardified.
Yeah.
So
is that a new word, a wizardified?
In England, some people had like umbrella stands that were made out of elephant feet, which just sounds so disgusting and gross and weird and not existent here in America.
No.
But like this was a thing
that do tiger feet here and lion's
we
feet.
Don't that. In Britain.
We don't care about elephants.
In like the Victorian times, it was a big thing. And but still, like you think about that gross connotation. So obviously the people who had these elephant feet umbrella stands were wealthy because they were getting it from these like endangered or at least hunted creatures during the time. But also just thinking of these elephants as lesser than creatures that didn't deserve to live, that were going to take its leg for a freaking umbrella stand.
Yep.
So to think of that as here we are in the Black's house and they have now taken a troll's leg and made it into an umbrella stand. Now, granted, trolls are disgusting and you know, mountain, you know, nose
troll bogeys.
But do they deserve to be killed and then had their leg turned into an umbrella stand?
Trolls
or is that more a like pure black? Exactly. So if you're talking about like probably Hermione Granger would not have a troll leg umbrella stand in her hallway, but a pure blood, dark wizard, magical family would have no problem whatsoever thinking trolls are lesser than us. They're lesser creatures. Mm-hmm. And of course, we're going to have this troll leg umbrella stand. So I just think that that's another thing. Now, of course, we've got the stuffed heads of the elves along the walls.
Yeah, but
that's another thing, right?
Yep.
That to them may have been like these are lesser than creatures, but as we find out, that's creature's goal.
I was going to say, what does creature think of
creature
all of this?
Is pumped to be up there on that wall one day. That is a major accomplishment.
So I guess my question then, Marvin, is if creature wants to be up on that wall, is it disrespectful?
Is it disrespectful to whom?
To elvish people. Is it disrespect? Is the act of taking an elf's head and stuffing it, putting it up on your wall?
I mean, he'll be dead by then.
I know, but is it disrespectful? Like, is
not to creature and not to creature's family.
Right. So I guess that's what I'm getting at. Is it wrong of this family to have that kind of...
But how much of this did they train their house elves?
Yeah, but house elves are people too, right? Like they can make
like
their
Stockholm
own decisions.
Stockholm syndrome, okay? Where you're like, oh, this is special. This is a big deal. You can trick people when you're in charge of them.
Yes, that's fair.
Like, would Dobby want that? No.
No. No, but here's the other question. How rampant is elf head stuffing within the wizarding community?
But exactly, you know, it's through the upper class. I mean, it's hard, right? Because we don't necessarily, we see that Sirius treats creature with a lot of disrespect.
Sure.
There's obviously regular muggle humans who stuff their dead animals and their dead pets because they loved them so much. Or like if they are hunters and they're proud of it. So to me, I think the Black family, from understanding this, did take pride in showing how many servants they had. Mm-hmm. And it sounds to me like creature did love to serve this family. And I wonder if they actually had a bit better relationship because he like lovingly takes care of this portrait.
Sure.
Whereas this is something that lowers my opinion of Sirius is how he treats creature. And I wonder if it's because of his upbringing in this wealth, always having these servants.
Yeah, but or is it anger because...
Is it anger because creature is associated with his family?
Yeah, well, and when you consider what his mother did to him...
Yeah, but creature didn't do that to him.
Fair.
So I'm just saying, it's a little touchy for me with Sirius and how he treats creature. Part of it makes me think that when you are raised in a full-blood wizarding family and just the ideas of elves being lesser than has been ingrained in you. I mean, we've seen that with Ron, right? Ron didn't think that there should have been spew, and he just kind of, even though his family didn't have house elves, that he looked at them slightly as lesser than. And it really takes a while for Ron's character to be better about appreciating non-human magical beings, in my opinion. And so for Sirius, that's kind of what I'm wondering is that, is it because he was in this full-blood, also dark family of witches and wizards, Because what's confusing to me is that it seems like Creature obviously loved Sirius's mommy, loved serving the House of Black. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if his mom, Sirius's mom, Mrs. Black, if you may, if she treated Creature cruelly. If this is how the whole Black family treat, because we get to see how the Malfoys treat Dobby.
Yes.
And Dobby, of course, is different than most house elves. And we get to hear and kind of see how, you know, the, oh my gosh, Faux Moody, the last season, last book.
I got you. Barty you know, Crouch.
The Crouches, how.
Junior.
How they treated Winky, kind of. You know what I mean? So I feel like every family has a different dynamic with their house elf. But from the way that Creature so lovingly takes care of this picture, I feel like maybe the Blacks were a little nicer to Creature. And it's just. So I'm wondering, I'm like, is this what Sirius saw and this is how he just always treats Creature? Or is it because Creature does serve the noble house of Black? Does Creature ever mutter extra things about Sirius? You're a disgrace. You
That's
know, like all of these things that like,
yeah,
I mean, imagine that. Imagine if like the person who always spoke badly about you, there was this little repeat soundtrack just following you around cleaning up. So it's just, it hurts my heart that Sirius treats him so badly.
This house would be a lot cleaner if you just picked up your underwear, wouldn't it, Sirius?
So it's just sad. I think it's a sad moment, but it obviously shows one of Sirius's imperfections. But I would have just hoped that he would have, I don't know, been a little nicer to Creature.
Yeah.
Things might have worked out a little differently. Let's just say that in this series.
The funny thing is, too, Mary, that, you know, you'd mentioned Ron and the Weasleys and how they seem to interpret house elves. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it comes, and this just might be the bias of being like, you know, the Weasleys as being, you know, relatively main characters in this story, where and you want to root for them. My sense from them, it's not like they actually truly believe that house elves are actually below them in terms of standing, but it's just a societal thing that, you know, like, for example, Americans don't typically spit in public. Like,
Gross.
Yes. But there are other countries that like that's just a normal thing, and we look at it like, oh, that's like, ugh. But they look at it like, well, that's a societal thing. Like that's what we're gonna do, you know. Like, and so it's not. We don't look at people like, oh, you're below me if you do that. But it's a thing where we have a societal expectation. Mm. And my sense from the Weasleys is that like, it's just a societal expectation that house elves are just not considered, right? They're not as, the structure of their lives and the proposal of their lives and the place of their lives are just not an expectation that society has. Whereas someone like the Malfoys, rather, yeah, I look at them and I say, yeah, they very purposely look at house elves as less than, right? Mm-hmm. Like that to me is a belief that, and again, maybe it's just because that's the way that the story posits these characters, right? Like, or not posits them, but proposes them to us as protagonists and antagonists, right? That's probably on purpose. But you know, it's just an interesting thing. It's one of those little cultural phenomena that is totally fake, but you can see how it works within this universe.
Yes,
it shows the testament of the world building and the storytelling ability from the author that she was able to create this kind of material and still have room for interpretation. Even within her own structures, right? Her own structural storytelling.
Correct. And I think it just adds in these layers. You know, a lot of the characters, if not all the characters, but most of them are very layered. And they're not just good or bad.
Yeah.
As Dumbledore points out, you know, that there's a lot of this gray area. And so I think that this just adds to one of those layers for one of our most beloved characters, Sirius.
Right. And then there's another, actually, when we're talking about the Weasleys here, I want to bring up Percy. Because the Percy thing to me, again, is one of those interesting little tidbits that the author brings into this story mm-hmm. that is kind of extraneous. Like it doesn't really 100% matter, but it's a bit of texture that when it's in there, you're like, I get it.
You know, reading this when I did, when it came out, I was in a point in my life where I was disjointed from my family. My family was very, very deep into their religious beliefs at the time. Mm-hmm. I had just gone, because when did this come out? In 2000?
What, this is what, 05?
Like when did 2003. Okay. So at this point, I'm pretty sure I was like homeless. Like I didn't even have a place to call home aside from college. Mm-hmm. And my family was just shifting. My parents had divorced and I was, you know, now a young adult. I was 21. I was officially an adult when this came out.
Yes.
So I actually read this understanding Percy. Which I think is very rare, going against your family and feeling like you're doing the right thing. Now, granted, we as the reader know he's not doing the right thing, right? We're Team Harry. If you're reading these books, you're Team Harry. And you were there in the labyrinth and you were there and Voldemort came back. But for most people, that wasn't the real thing, right? And what society and what schooling and everything Percy has worked hard for, he has really forged this way. And he has seen difficulties in his family's life mm-hmm. That he has tried to veer away from. He wants to make sure that he has a secure job, right? He doesn't want to grow. He doesn't want to live a poor life. He is not necessarily extraordinary to either of his parents. He's not this hot guy and he's not, you know, hanging out with goblins and he's not doing dragon stuff and mm-hmm. he doesn't even have the wit and banter that Fred and George have. He's not a girl. He doesn't have anything that like truly makes him stand out.
And he's not best friends with Harry freaking
Potter. No, exactly. So it's not even like he has that in common with Ron to be a middle child. And as a middle child myself mm-hmm. who didn't fit in with her family as I was reading this, as I myself was 21, which I feel like is very close to Percy's age, I understood that he thought he was doing the right thing. And I understood why he said what he said. Not that it was right, but here he is as a young adult who was not in the labyrinth, who has grown up and has tried to do the right things. And the people who he admires and looks to are telling him, Harry Potter's lying. Your parents, listen, they're with Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, Dumbledore.
Yeah.
99% of the population know what's up and they don't. And it made me even think, you know, we've just gone through this whole pandemic thing about how people's opinions on the pandemic and other situations since then have really divided families and people feel so passionately about it. And especially for people who are burgeoning new adults who feel like, all right, I am going to take my stand. And I remember holidays being so tricky because I finally felt like I'm an adult. I'm going to use my voice. Mm-hmm. And I am not this little kid that you can boss around. I don't even live here at home.
Yeah.
And I'm going to stand up for what I think and what I believe. So I feel badly for Percy. And Percy does come around.
Yes.
Percy comes to the Battle of Hogwarts. Percy learns that he was wrong. But I'm just saying that that I feel bad for him because we read this through Harry's eyes, knowing the truth. Mm-hmm. But when I read this as a 21-year-old who didn't fit in with her family at the time, who felt like, you know, I was struggling because I was being in the arts. I had a lot of friends in the LGBTQ+ community, and that wasn't really a big thing for my family at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of felt like I was fighting these battles that I hadn't felt my parents were passionate about.
Sure.
And so, yeah, it was interesting for me to read it at Percy's age, feeling ostracized and alone from my family. I still think I was right. But I'm just saying it stinks. And it stinks because I think usually as readers, we're just like, oh, Percy. Because that's how we feel the entire time when we read these books. Like, oh, Percy, you're so annoying. Oh, you're tattling. Yeah. Oh, you're so bad. But like when you look at it from Percy's perspective, I kind of feel bad for him.
You know, I kind of do too. And I think this is a great example of what the author does to show you that the world is not fully black and white.
Oh.
Right? It is, these are fully realized human beings, right? And they have fully realized emotions, and they're going to make wrong choices. And it's not bad that they make the choices. You know, it's just informed by what they believe is the right thing. And I remember, like you, Mary, I remember being that age and making choices and thinking, well, this is what I'm going to do because I want to, like, these things upset me and I'm going to make this change, or I'm not going to make this change.
It's the first time you really can, right? Like, Ron can only do so much if he doesn't agree with his parents. He still lives there. They still, like, pay for his food and books. But when you are an adult, I mean, you yourself have gone through massive change with your parents. And so when you do get to this point in your adulthood where you do feel like, all right, I feel differently than my parents on an issue.
Yeah.
And I am confident now that I can voice this.
But one of the things too that I want to caution our younger listeners on, right, is one day you're going to look back and be like, that old guy Blake on that random Harry Potter podcast that I used to listen to told me this, and he was right. That freaking guy was right. There's going to come a time in your life when you are hot and bothered by something that your parents do or your friends do.
Especially if you're a Gryffindor.
Yeah. And you feel like, man, I got to let them know.
You're going to be all caps Harry.
And you're going to be totally caps lock Harry. And you're going to stand up and you're going to say no. And you're going to pick the fight and you're going to fight the battle. And a lot of the time, my younger listener, I want you to understand this. It's just not worth it.
Correct.
It's just like there's a saying, you know, up at least here in the North. I'm not sure if it's something.
Up here in the North.
You know.
Of the North.
In the King of the North here. I'm not sure if it's something, you know, across the country. But when you're full, there's a different variation of it that I know. But when you're full of pee and vinegar, okay, you get hot. And that pee and vinegar, that makes you hot. That makes you wanna fight. And I think, Mary, something that you kind of did when you were that age is that you were full of pee and vinegar and you wanted to stand up and you wanted to do the thing. And one of the beauties of being married to me is that being married to you is that we kind of mellowed each other out in those aspects as we've gotten older, where we're like, all right, should we be doing this? Should we really make that choice?
And Percy doesn't have that.
Percy
person.
Doesn't have that yet. And the other thing too, young listener, is you won't have that either. You won't have somebody.
You may not.
Well, more than likely you won't when you're that age. But you may. But you may not.
Because it may be a sibling. Like, I find that some people's siblings know them and can kind of calm them down and say, like, hey, listen, like, let's not pick this fight right now.
Yes.
But yeah, it generally needs to be someone who's seen you and knows you for a long time. And I think that that's what's hard when you're at these young adult ages, is that everyone you're meeting in these new phases of life, you've only known for a few years, if that, you know, whether it's you've gone to school and you've met people there, or you've gotten your new job and that's it. Like, Percy, no one in Percy's family, aside from his mom, was very close with him. You know, we don't see him having close relationships with any of his siblings.
Right.
So we don't have anyone to balance him out. Ron would do just the same thing. Ron hates being poor.
Yes.
If Ron's best friends weren't Harry Potter and Hermione Granger, he would have gotten a lot more trouble for talking his mind.
I would agree. 100%. Like, guaranteed.
Like, imagine Ron finally getting a job that pays him well, and Arthur being like, don't do that job. He'd be like, Dad, what do you know? I don't want to be poor. Like, Ron would have totally done it. But he has Harry and Hermione to balance him and calm him down. But they've been his friends now for 5 years.
Right. And I think Percy is also the kind of person that when he gets it in his head that he's got this thing, I'm going to do whatever it takes, then, nope, I'm not going to be my dad. Why would I want to be my dad?
And what breaks my heart, though, is that Molly, a of course, goes to London to try to go talk to him.
Yeah.
And he won't even talk to her.
And that's the other thing,
that's
too.
That's what makes me sad, is that she tried to be that bridge.
Right. And again, when you're that full of pee and vinegar, mm-hmm. you're just going to say, no, I've mm-hmm. made my choice. I don't want to associate with you. And that's what these kind of situations do to people, right? And it's not just, oh, hey, like, I don't want to be poor. It's, no, you people are crazy. Like, you think that Voldemort's back, and you think that all of this stuff is happening. Like, and then there's going to be the Wizarding War again. Like, it's going to happen.
Like, this, to me, this is, because once again, 99% of the population doesn't believe that Harry Potter saw Voldemort, anything.
Right.
This would be like Percy's family believing the earth is flat.
Yes.
Okay? And
yes.
he'd be like, guys, it's not.
Yeah.
Science has proven it. They've written books about it. It's in the news. Like,
right.
he'd be, that's what I feel badly about. And that's why I'm saying it's been so interesting over these past few years to see how passionately people can believe in things.
Right.
That you completely disagree about, and so much of it is based upon your experience and or the people who you surround yourself with.
Sure.
So now Percy has been truly into this, into politics, and he is being praised and he is being promoted, things that he never got before. I mean, his love language obviously is words of affirmation.
But like, but the other part of this too, Mary, is that he doesn't have an awareness of his promotions.
No.
He doesn't have a self-awareness of like...
He eventually will.
Yeah, but like right now he doesn't. He's just taking it at face value.
Yes.
And that's, again, young listener, that's what happens when you kind of delude yourself into thinking that you're right. And that everybody else, despite all of the evidence around you, that no, everybody else is wrong and I'm right. That's where you get into trouble sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember there was a conversation I had with somebody when I was working in my previous job. And this person came up to me and they said, you know, X, Y, and Z thing. Like, it was like, I do this and I do that. And, you know, all of the, like, nobody knows what I do here. And I'm great.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, I heard every single other person at that facility be like, that person sucks. And they don't do X, they don't do Y. And I brought this to their attention.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, no, I do this and I do that. And I said to him, so every single person in this store is lying, except you. Everybody. They've all got it against you. Everybody has decided that you are the opposite of what you're saying. And when you get into that kind of situation, and when you realize, ooh, that's probably not great, Bob, that's when you know that more than likely you're the problem and not vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, and it's a hard thing to like balance when you're that young, because you know you want to fight and you got your blood is pumping. Like I love what the author did with Percy in this regard,
and what he says to Arthur hurts,
right?
But it's mostly true.
Correct.
It's mostly true.
Correct.
And what isn't true is based upon opinion, right? Like, people think Dumbledore's loopy and loony. Some people do.
Right.
Honestly, like, sometimes he is. So it's just, it's hard. And my heart breaks, especially for Molly.
Yeah. Because you can tell that she wants it to just be copacetic, man. Like, this is my kid.
And she's probably always worried about Percy. Oh, Percy's, nobody came to Percy's birthday party. You know?
He got a dung bomb in the mail.
Nobody said yes to go with him to the Yule Ball. Like, you know, you just feel... For Molly to go do that and then to be shut out from her son breaks my heart for her.
Yeah.
So
you could definitely, you get the feeling that she works harder with Percy than her other kids.
And this is what happens in tough times in families, especially bigger families, but just families in general, when not everybody believes the same thing and you're passionate about something.
Well, especially in extreme times, like most of these people are finding themselves.
Yeah.
Like, you brought up the COVID thing, right?
You know, our politics, like, we're going to be heading into another presidential season.
Right.
Like, it's just... Everyone in America right now knows what I'm talking about. It gets awkward and it gets hard and feelings get hurt. And you sit there saying, how in the world can these people think differently than I do? I love them so much. Yeah. I've been with them through so much, and yet they truly, in their bones, feel this way.
Well, it's not even think differently, because I think differently is okay, but where there turns issues is how could they think that? Mm. That is appalling. Mm. And I think that's where we are with Percy and his family. It's not that they think differently, it's how can they think that Voldemort is back?
Yeah.
How is that a possibility? Like, that's banana land, right? Of course, he's wrong, but that doesn't mean that he believes he's wrong, right? Yeah. I don't remember feeling like this when I read it the first time.
No.
But now that I have read it the second time, this whole...
It's just so complicated.
This whole thing with Percy has stood out to me. Mm-hmm. And it is complicated. And it's a little bit more emotionally... I was just going to say complex. But it's emotionally complex.
But I think that this is important because Harry is surrounded by believers. He's always surrounded by believers, his friends and then Dumbledore. And this is just a taste. I mean, he's going to go to school and people are going to be against him. The paper is going to be, you know, Hermione starts to tell him, like, the paper is writing bad things about you. They're making fun of you.
Yeah.
So this is just showing you how it is ever present from here on out that people don't believe Harry, that he is going to be an outsider when he has always been the chosen one and praised and just comfy and cozy. And now it is your word against the world's.
Yeah. And another thing that I think is some, I don't want to say subtext here because I think it's pretty directly referenced, but I would say that it's fairly subtext. And that is the danger of state media, right? Mm-hmm. State media is... Ooh, as an American, I say any kind of state-run media is not where I want to be. I think that's a very tricky thing. And state media is difficult because it is so heavily influenced by the government. I mean, it's specifically influenced by the government. And in this particular thing, in this particular instance, you know, you have the Daily Prophet, which ostensibly should be an independent organization. Mm-hmm. But from what we can see in textual evidence here, how they're making fun of Harry, like you said, Mary, mm-hmm. it is very heavily influenced by the Minister of Magic. And thereby is, in effect, state media. Because if the Minister of Magic believed Harry, you can bet your bottom dollar that the Daily Prophet is not going to be having the stories that they do about Harry if he's so believed. And that's why, like, you know, when you talk about Luna Lovegood's dad, you know, and the Quibbler and the whole thing, it's kind of funny to make fun of him and make fun of the Quibbler and everything. But it's important to have media like the Quibbler. Right, it's important to have that oppositional voice. You know, again, whether or not you believe it, and this is a conversation that I actually had with our little lad, where it was like, you know, as an American, we all have a right to our opinion, and we all have a right to express that opinion. And there was a protest that was happening here, and he's like, "Oh, Dad, that protest is so stupid. They shouldn't do this, and they shouldn't do that." I said, "No, no, no." No, they should, because they believe it, and they have every right to do it. And we don't have to agree with them, because just as much as they have the right to do it, we have just as much of a right to not agree. Mm-hmm. And regardless of the message or how you deliver that message, it's important to have that oppositional voice. And it's important to celebrate that oppositional voice. Right. So sorry.
It's interesting and it's complicated. And this is one of the reasons why I just love rereading this series, because you see things differently as you go through life and things happen to you.
Yes.
We get some extendable ears. We get some wonderful Fred and George dulcet tones, extendable ears, and Crookshanks playing with dung bombs outside the kitchen. And just the world of the Weasleys and having Crookshanks back, even though we've got all of this yelling Harry and the Percy drama.
Oh, how about Ginny and Mrs. Weasley? The whole back and forth where it was like, after the meeting, her mother asks why there are so many dung bombs on the doors.
Yeah.
And Ginny says, "Oh, Crookshanks," said Ginny unblushingly. "He loves playing with them." "Oh," said Mrs. Weasley, "I thought it might have been Creature. He keeps doing odd things like that. Now, don't forget to keep your voices down in the hall. Ginny, your hands are filthy. What have you been doing? Go and wash them before dinner, please." Like...
But really,
it's great.
Ginny.
It's Ginny
throwing the dung bombs to see if the charm is going on.
It's so great.
It just goes over Molly's head.
It's awesome. So great. I love that little back and forth though.
Oh, must be Crookshanks. You know, obviously we don't get completely involved with the Order and everyone, but we do hear that Snape shows up to these things. Snape never eats here, and he leaves. So they're about to go and have dinner in a moment. Why doesn't Snape eat dinner here?
That's a great question.
You know, a lot of people used to speculate that Snape was a vampire.
You know, oh, interesting.
Shift into a bat, and you know, that's why he wouldn't eat there because
interesting.
He needed to go eat other things. But he's not a vampire.
Yes.
But why wouldn't Snape eat there?
I think a very traditional thought process mm-hmm. behind it all, Mary, is that when you break bread with somebody, mm-hmm. that means you're inviting them into your home, or you know, you're inviting them into your personal space. Like I think the meaning behind breaking bread with somebody in the modern time is kind of, you know, it's kind of dissipated.
Mm-hmm.
But for a culture that, by all accounts, I think values antiquity, like with the way, you know, with quills and that, like that kind of, like that kind of cultural twist on things, or that cultural influence, I could see wizards saying like, no, you're not, like, we're not buddies.
Yeah.
I'm not going to break bread with you.
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to, you know, you go back to the Game of Thrones thing, right? Where it's like, oh, no, like, they invited us into our home. They had a drink and they gave us food, and, you know, it all, you know.
You know nothing, well. Jon Snow.
You would think that there is a natural right of protection when that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you know, spoiler alert, like the Red Wedding. My sense is, no, we're not going to. We're not like that right of protection, that right of closeness. I don't share that with
yeah.
you. Yeah. I don't know. Like, that's my thing.
I feel exactly like I think he's there for business, but then once business talk is done, all the kids are invited to eat.
Yes.
And I feel like when the kids are invited to eat, business is off of the table and it's more just chatting, you know, being social yeah. and having those friendship moments. And I agree with you, Snape doesn't want to be a part of that. Plus, he's most of these kids' professor. Okay. So he's right. the only one there that is still a professor and like, probably would feel pretty awkward.
Yeah.
So in general, there's that. But yeah, he doesn't want to make small talk with these people.
Sure.
And then I also think this allows him to spend less time out of Hogwarts that people could wonder, you know, what does he do every night at this time or whatever? Whereas now maybe he can go have dinner with the Malfoys. Maybe he can go have dinner with other Death Eaters because
sure.
obviously that's what he's supposed to be doing. So I agree with you. I don't think, I mean, because remember 2 years ago he was telling Sirius, I wish the Dementor would give you the kiss. So he is still not close to Sirius. They have
right.
not made up. They are not best friends. He's not friends with any of these people. So why does he want to sit around and listen to their like snot-nosed kids?
Right.
You know, throw food at each other, deal with Tonks, tripping over things all the time. He would just sit and roll his eyes. And maybe he doesn't like Molly's cooking. Maybe he has an allergy, you know?
He's allergic to, like, cat. Maybe to he's allergic life. To cats.
Maybe he's allergic to cats.
I wouldn't be surprised.
But I do. I think if he spent too much time away from Hogwarts and just from other things, he wouldn't be able to do as much of his Death Eater duties.
Yeah.
And now I can go have Death Eater dinners, which, you know, are posh if they're at Malfoy Manor.
Oh, yes.
Like you could see Molly being like, oh, we're going to have stew again. We're going to have oatmeal again. He'd be like, thanks, Molly. I think I'm going to pass. Love your oatmeal. Love your porridge. But at the Malfoys, it's a 5-course dinner.
Yeah. I'm going to go have myself a tomahawk steak.
I'm going to go have surf and turf. Thank you very much.
But, you know, Mary, at the very least, and I think I want to reiterate this, it's like he is a professor of these children,
yes.
right? Like, it's kind of like when you're the boss and there's like a Christmas party, right? When you're the boss, you show up late and you leave early.
Does he want want to spend more time with Ron Weasley?
Abso-freaking-lutely not.
And like know-it-all Hermione Granger?
And that freaking Harry Potter.
Oh my God.
That kid.
No. Oh no.
That freaking kid. Like 0.0 chance.
Oh, it'd be like stuck in a room even longer than you have to with your least favorite people.
Oh.
In a group
with
project.
Your nemesis.
It's the group project that then they say, hey, my mom said we can have everyone over to work on a group project some more. Nope. I'm busy.
No.
Sorry. I'll just do it when it's in school.
Snape's response would be, obviously.
Oh, snaps to you.
All right. You got anything else you want to talk about in this chapter, Marvin?
That is it for now, my love.
Are you ready for a different perspective?
Yes.
All right. Let's get it done.
Holy cricket. You're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
Arthur Weasley.
Adi, what's up, buddy?
I mean, I'm not even in this chapter, but I mentioned.
No, no. Well, you know, you're not one for the limelight, and that's okay. And that's why I'm surprised that you're here. But you know what? You have been mentioned.
Been busy.
You got things going on.
I've been busy.
Your kid just kind of put you body slammed you to the center of the earth.
You know,
how'd that work for you?
When you have a big family, uh-huh. When you have lots of kids, there are lots of ups and downs all happening at the same time.
Mm.
All of them. Mm-hmm. It is so confusing. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness one of my kids is best friend with Harry Potter. I mean, that's the easy button, right? Easy.
Go chat with Harry, kid.
Thank you. Then I've got Ginny.
Yeah. Ginny can't do anything wrong.
She just can't. She's perfect.
She's perfect. No way she would ever throw any dung bombs whatsoever.
Oh, no. She's amazing. I love Ginny. the thing with Percy sucks. It sucks a lot.
Yeah.
But I gotta tell you.
What's that?
My kid Bill.
Uh-huh.
Got the best job ever. Works at Gringotts, hangs out with goblins, does really cool stuff. I'm pretty sure he's got like the hottest girlfriend ever.
Really?
I'm not gonna say too much. But I'm proud of that guy.
He got it.
He's got it. Things are moving and shaking.
Uh-huh.
He may be the first Weasley to get married.
Wow.
I'm kind of pumped.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited about it. So
are you telling me that he outkicked his coverage with this one?
Tremendously. Tremendously. Working on his French. Yeah, French something. French something.
Sorry,
but he's my first kid to like really go out and peruse the dating world in one way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Fred and George, God bless them. I mean, they're
what are they gonna do with their lives?
I don't know. It's awesome.
Couldn't you be a better dad to Fred and George?
Who are you, Percy? I was just gonna say, I'm proud of them.
Oh,
they make me laugh.
Make me laugh. Cute. Now tell them to go make some money making people laugh.
They will. Oh my God, you made me feel so bad, Blake.
Why?
And seen. Because you're hating on me. And now it's like Arthur already got hated on by Percy, and now you're hating on me for being fans of Fred and George, who I've already told you multiple times I would have married one of them.
That's true.
So of course I am proud of them, Mary Larson.
Listen. My job.
You would have been the Percy. You would have been Percy.
No, I would not have been.
You were the middle child, not the baby, not the like rich, spoiled baby that you were in real life. But if Blake Larson.
What do you mean the rich, spoiled baby?
We all know it. So if you were not that, if you were the middle child and had nothing special about you and didn't get. You would have been stewing. Then finally, you get like all these accolades, you get promotions, you get positions of power, you get money, you get your own apartment, and your dad just comes on. Oh, you would have been Percy.
I don't know. I don't know.
Oh. Don't be hating on me. Don't be hating on my Arthur Weasley.
Listen, in this segment, I'm supposed to be...
Who are you supposed to be?
I'm supposed to be the interviewer. I'm the straight man in all of this. Like, I don't have
that term. It doesn't make sense.
It's the Jason Bateman character of Arrested Development. Like, he's just the regular guy.
Okay.
You know, like
the
he's
boring, just
the serious,
ask question.
The serious person.
Oh, see, this is so confusing because you could say straight guy, and I don't know what that means, and then you could say serious, and I don't know if you're talking about serious black. You just need to stop talking.
What I'm saying is,
yeah.
I'm supposed to be the person that doesn't
asks
shine.
Questions.
You're the person that shines, and
I don't feel like you're shining anymore.
And I try to evoke or elicit responses from you.
You did.
See, there you go. That's how it works. That's that job.
I'm out of character, though, now, so mission accomplished.
All right. So we actually have to get back to our kids. So I'm going to hold off on the email and the questions and everything for right now.
Okay.
We'll do that next episode. Okay. So if you did, I know that there are a ton of you that did send emails in. So thank you very much for doing that. I promise we'll get to it next episode. All right, Marvin, you ready to close this bad boy out?
Damn.
All right, let's get it done, shall we?
We shall. We want to thank you all so incredibly much for tuning in to this episode of the Pilotiverse. Don't forget, one of the best things you could do is share. Whether you write a review in Apple Podcasts, or you take a screenshot of this podcast and throw it up on your social media feed, or just tell other Potter fans about this podcast, sharing is caring, and it's truly the best way for other podcasts to grow.
And of course, go to maryandblake.com to check out all the great podcasts that we have going on over there, whether it is Outlandercast, which is coming back very soon as we're recording this, or obviously we have the Potterverse because you're listening to that.
Bridgerton is coming back.
Yes, and we just finished up The Last Kingdom as well. So if you're a fan of The Last Kingdom, trust me, you don't want to miss it. It was amazing. And we got a whole bunch of other stuff going on too. So yeah, that's that.
On that note, friends, mischief managed.
Wait, you're supposed to do my name's Mary.
My name's Mary.
My name is Blake.
Mischief managed.
Thank you.
I forgot who I was because I was so thrown off by that whole different perspective.
It's not like we've done this podcast. I don't know. How many? It's not like how many hundreds of hours of podcasts.
I've been thrown off like that. I think I just got really personal about Percy.
I can't help that. It's not my job.
Nope. I did my job.
Your name's what?
Mary.
My name's Blake.
Mischief managed.
For the third time.
It was Crookshanks all along. I swear. Crookshanks did it.